Welcome back to the Trojan Talk Podcast. I'm Ryan Young, publisher of Trojansports.com. And we are here to wrap up USC spring practice. We're going to have a ton of breakdown on the site. I'm working on a couple of what we learned pieces about the offense and defense, my top 10 players and storylines from spring, stock risers, et cetera, et cetera. And for those who have long been followers of Trojansports.com, I'm excited to announce that we have a couple really in-depth film analysis breakdowns coming from our Tajwar Kandikar, who his analysis work is some parallel. So you'll want to check those out. I won't give away who they're on, but definitely a couple players that are new to the program who should make huge impacts this year, and you'll want to go on that deep dive with Tajwar and us. So that's all coming this week on Trojansports.com. Plus, of course, we're in transfer portal season, so there is news every day. There's things to react to every day, both football and basketball-wise. We posted on Monday night a breakdown of Eric Musselman's USC basketball roster rebuild as it currently stands, with now 9 scholarship players, only one returning player that he inherited, and a lot of work done in the portal so far, and still 4 spots to work with. And I broke down all the additions, their strengths, how the sum of the parts adds up, and where the major holes and weaknesses still remain for that. So check that out. But this podcast today is all football, all USC football. Come out with the spring game Saturday. A great showcase for the defense. 4 interceptions and a fumble, however you want to call it, a backwards pitch snatched out of the air for the 5th turnover. I'm sure that Lincoln Riley couldn't have drawn it up better after all the hullabaloo and hype for this much ballyhooed new defensive coaching staff and all the changes made and this new identity on that side of the ball and just really moving forward from the Alex Grinch era. There is so much to be optimistic about, but it's all been talk so far. And to see it in action in the Coliseum Saturday, where the defense really stole the show, I think is going to just put even more weight behind the hopes that this defense could actually get much better really fast, just like Danton Lynn did last year at UCLA. So, lots of breakdown from the spring game, but also the spring as a whole. And so I wanted to bring on a fresh perspective. So we are going to be joined by the Los Angeles Times beat writer, USC beat writer, Ryan Karchi. Does a great job for the Times. Great friend of mine. I asked him to come on for a half hour on Monday, and we ended up going for over 50 minutes and covered a lot of ground, and I think we both had a great time with it. So I hope you'll enjoy listening to it as much as we enjoyed doing it. I think we hit on almost every relevant topic from spring, maybe some opinions you haven't heard elsewhere. I don't know. We'll see, but that's going to be the show. So again, check Trojansports.com for the written coverage this week, for the excellent analysis breakdowns coming from the inimitable Tajwar Kandikar. With that said, let's get to our discussion. Okay, as teased at the top of the show, we have a very special guest back on the program today. Ryan Karchi, the USC beat writer for the Los Angeles Times, has been on the show several times. It's been a while, though. He's had a busy stretch in life. He's a new father. Today, Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Of course. I was hoping you hadn't forgotten about me while I was out on paternity leave.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Been looking forward to getting you back on the program for a while. And, you know, we're going to lean heavily on you today because my audience hears my thoughts all the time. And we need fresh perspective. And that's why you're here. And I'm not.
My wife would say that you can lean on me at your own risk.
Let's dive right into it. And let's start with Saturday. And just off the top of your head, give us your top 3 takeaways from the spring game. And as a caveat, we know not to read too much into a spring game. It was our first time actually seeing them go through a full session. We don't see much of practice. We see stretching and individual drills. So we got to actually see some action Saturday. What were your top 3 takeaways?
I'm glad you gave the caveat, because I feel like I'm constantly saying the same thing about this spring game. But
it has to be said.
It does. I will say that, you know, I think obviously everyone looked at the game and thought, oh, my God, what a great day for the defense. And I do think, you know, that is, you know, an irrefutable fact, but the defense looked good. Now, whether that was because the offense was struggling or the offense, you know, didn't have a very complex game plan or whatever, you know, explanation you want to give.
Yes.
I think it's fair I think it's fair to say that the defense impressed. And I think the most impressive group of that, and the one that I think that is the most clear has improved, is the secondary. And, you know, whether that's a matter of the personnel, whether that's a, you know, Dan Lynn's scheme or Doug Belk's coaching as the secondary's coach, that group just looked better. You know, forcing four turnovers from the secondary, all interceptions. Those interceptions, not all those catches were easy. I mean, these were athletic plays made by, you know, DeCarlos Nicholson. He had a couple of nice plays. Marcellus Williams had a great play. And I just think that length at cornerback, you know, really shown through. And I think they should probably feel pretty good about the secondary coming out of that. Now, defensively, I think the one thing that is getting papered over in one of my takeaways was it really feels like the defensive line is in a scary, thin position. You know, Kobe Pepe, who only had a handful of games that he played in at USC for the last 4 years, you know, starts on the defensive line. Now, granted, you don't have Bear Alexander, who obviously, you know, is a all-conference level talent. But he's also someone who's dealt with injuries. So at some point next season, likely you will find yourself without Bear Alexander going up against a Big Ten offensive line. That, at this point, I think is a pretty scary proposition. And in terms of questions I have about the defense, you know, defensive line is top of that list. Now, there are a lot of young guys who I thought, you know, looked pretty good. I think you had even mentioned on Twitter, you know, Cameron Fountain had a couple of nice plays.
Yeah.
So some of those guys just look very mature for being young guys. And I think, you know, that bodes well. My third takeaway, I would say, you know, flipping over to the offense. I'm going to leave quarterback for another question, but I think you could draw some conclusions about Miller Moss maybe not having the best performance at the spring game, and Jaden Maiava actually looking a little bit sharper than he did. But I think I'd focus on the wide receivers. You know, there's not a lot of depth in that room. That's very clear. They probably need to add, you know, just a body in the transfer portal here in the next month or so. But it really seems like that top line group, the four sophomores, you know, Zachariah Branch, Jacoby Lane, Makai Lemon, and Deuce Robinson, you know, the potential there is just so clear. You know, Jacoby Lane had, you know, a really eye-popping catch in that game, and or in the spring game, and Makai Lemon had six catches to lead the team, and I just think they're going to be just fine in terms of those top-level guys. I don't think you need to bring in a premier, you know, upperclassman receiver like maybe they have in the past. So I'd say that's where I'd start on my takeaways.
Great. And we're going to get much deeper into a couple of those topics, including the secondary. So I will leave some of those thoughts for future segment here coming up. Just to play off where you started, I think it was the best case scenario for them, for the defense, to kind of win the day and shine and kind of just back up some of this optimism and momentum they've been building mostly through word of mouth since, you know, hiring this new defensive staff and what we've been hearing about them, what they've been saying. It's all been words to that point. And for them to come out Saturday and actually put some play behind it and show people that this is a pretty opportunistic defense with a lot of playmakers, I think was the best case scenario. I don't think anyone's going to worry about a Lincoln Riley offense come the fall. So that played out perfectly. I had a few other ones I noted here, just kind of my top general takeaways. And you skipped over the quarterbacks. I'll hit it right here. You know, I've kind of laughed all spring that everyone keeps asking Lincoln about how's the quarterback competition progressing. And to me, it's not a quarterback competition. I mean, they're competing every day, but there is zero question, or has been zero question in my mind, that Miller Moss will be the starter versus LSU September 1st. It's just simple logic. 2 years in the system, played lights out in the bowl game, has universal support in that locker room, is kind of looked at as the leader of not only the offense but this team. There's just no way he's going to be unseated for the season. And you got Riley to kind of give the most on-the-record strong comment about that afterward when he said, yeah, he's clearly ahead. He would be the guy right now. But Jade Maiava did look really good Saturday, and I think you have to feel good about him as a second option if needed at some point. But I hope that the contrived quarterback competition talk is shelved for a little bit at least.
This has really bothered you, I will say, for everyone who might not believe what you're saying. It's a topic you have covered extensively at practices. I think use the phrase quarterback competition.
You did.
My question. I figure, yeah, I appreciate you not calling me out there, but I'll take the heat.
I knew what you were getting at when you asked. It was a very informed question that got a good response. But it has been a personal bugaboo. And honestly, I think it really goes back to 2 years ago when Caleb came in and some reporters insisted on asking about the quarterback competition through the spring, when there was zero question in the world that Caleb Williams, a Heisman candidate already at that point, was going to be the guy.
That was absolutely absurd. I agree. That was on another level.
So there's some lingering, whatever you want to call it, from that for me. And it's kind of like triggered those memories hearing it this spring. Anyways, so that's that. Number two, and this is one that I don't think anyone's really talked about or put much thought into, but I thought it was telling Saturday that Quentin Joyner only got one carry. And why is that telling? I think it's telling because I'm convinced he's going to be a huge factor this year. He's going to have a breakout season. Lincoln Riley's alluded to this a few times. He's hinted at it. So it's not a totally well-kept secret. But I don't think they wanted to put a lot of him on tape nationally, especially for Big Ten opponents. He's largely an unknown. You know, they bring in Woody Marks, who will also have a big role. There's a lot of tape on him. Teams figure that he's going to kind of be the primary guy. But I think they wanted to not maybe totally showcase what Quentin Joyner is going to do breaking out this year. And I always find it interesting. It's kind of a reverse science in spring games. Some of the guys that play the most doesn't correlate to their role or their projection for the season. Some of the guys who play the least doesn't correlate to their role for the season, because it's an opportunity to see guys that maybe aren't going to get in that moment, in that spotlight, on that stage much, get some evaluation on them. But for a guy like Quentin Joyner, I think they know they have a star there, and there was no need to put that on full display. And in fact, Riley said after the game, and I quote, "I think Quentin's going to be a really big part of what we do. I really do. I think he had one carry today, and he pops it. I tell you, he pops one every day." File that away, folks. That's my prediction, and I think it was notable that he had one carry. And my third takeaway was actually about the DBs, who I said I wasn't going to talk about. But you know what? It's my show, and I can do what I want. So on the secondary, I won't get all the meat off the bone here, but I wanted to hone in on a couple comments that were really, really telling to me. And it's been interesting all spring to just hear. It's almost like what the kids today would call subtweeting. You know, there's just some very subtle digs at the previous staff, or maybe not even at the staff, but just at what that defense was and what it wasn't. And we've heard comments from Lincoln about how he, you know, prioritized hiring a coordinator who was willing to be flexible and adjust to the personnel and to different opponents each week. You know, stuff like that, just kind of pointed comments. But then, you know, from the players, we heard Josh Henson, the O-line coach, say that the defense is playing through the O-line this year instead of around them. And you're like, huh, that seems like something that you should probably do more often. So along those lines, in that vein of those comments, Prophet Brown had a really interesting one. The cornerback nickel who had the 100-yard pick six Saturday. Maybe talk about him more later. But he said, we're being put in position to make these plays and have the freedom to go out there and play fast. That's really important, especially in the secondary. I feel like we're on one page. If I'm at corner, I have faith Kamari Ramsey's going to be on the back end, and that's going to allow me to play confident and maybe jump on the route or be more aggressive. When it's like that, it's really fun to play defense rather than you having to worry about giving up the big play or giving up something. It's like you're able to go out there and be free and play. And one of the big criticisms everyone had last year, but I hit this a bunch on this show and other platforms, is that there just never seemed to be a plan B on any kind of coverage or play. Like if the first tackle missed, or if the corner didn't make a play on the ball, there was no fail safe. There was no safety net ever. It was just like you had to beat one guy at all times, and you were home free against this defense. And I think that's kind of what he's getting at, is that there's a lot more trust, and that there's a more cogent scheme and unit where all the players know that they're not on islands at all time. So that stood out to me. And then Miller Moss's comments, also very telling, where he said he's been going back and watching old cut-ups of the offensive install. I'm not sure what value that has to him now, but I'm not a quarterback, so we won't get into that. But he's watching cut-ups from 2 years ago, a year ago, against the previous defense. And he goes, obviously watching them in practice against the defense in the previous years, there were definitely things that were largely open that are not now largely open.
It doesn't get as clear as that. It doesn't get much more clear than that.
Exactly. So while a lot of what we're doing is projecting from a very limited sample size of actual action we've seen and going a lot of comments we've heard from the spring, when you hear stuff like that, you just have to accept and believe that things have really changed back there, and then there is reason to believe that this defense could take major strides very quickly.
I will say this. I do always think when a new coach comes in the spring, when the stakes aren't very high and everyone's pumping it up, how much stock can you put in comments at this point? Especially comments about, like, this scheme is so much better than our last scheme for this reason. I mean, I do think to some degree, and I think the Miller Moss comments are especially interesting because he's not on the defensive side. He's purely, you know, making that comment based on what his eyes have shown him, not vibes, you know? So I do think that says a lot. But I also think, you know, part of the problem with the Alex Grinch system, it seems like, at least from what we've been able to glean, is that, like Prophet sort of mentioned, there was almost too much going on. There were mixed messages.
Right, exactly.
And I don't think anyone is shocked to hear that Alex Grinch was confusing in an explanation of something, some sort of complicated scheme. I think, like, just simplifying that, I think Dan Lynn did his install the right way in that, what does it matter if the whole defense is installed in the spring? You know, just get the important tenets of that scheme installed in the spring and very slowly make sure that everything is right along the way. And I think we probably haven't seen even that much from what the scheme offers. So, you know, I think, like, optimism abounds in the spring always, but I do think, you know, the confidence is high right now after the confidence was just tremendously low. So that is definitely a good thing, no matter how you can spin it.
Yeah, very fair points. And as one of my next prompts, I was going to say, what did we actually learn about the defense? We've kind of answered that to a degree and hit on that. To your point, though, I do think that while you have to parse the comments and understand that they're all going to be positive and they're all going to be very encouraging by nature, when you hear very specific things, that's what I latch onto. When you hear very specific observations or points, like some of the ones I mentioned already, that's where I do put stock in that and say that sounds real to me.
Sure. And I think, you know, especially when you hear those comments so often, and I think when it comes to an individual player basis, that's even more valuable. I mean, when you hear, like, we didn't see a ton out of the safeties in the spring game. And I think it's, you know, without, like, really honing in on watching the back end of the defense, it's hard to, like, evaluate off of an exhibition what they even look like. But hearing them, you know, Kamari Ramsey and Akili Arnold be mentioned constantly all spring.
Yeah.
I mean, you just have to start to buy into the fact that, like, these guys are good. I don't think that, like, I certainly put stock in that, but it'll be interesting. I do think, like, especially with the front seven, I feel like it's really hard to learn anything. That defensive line might look different come the fall. The linebackers, it's kind of hard when you're not fully tackling and, you know, what is the offense like even really throwing at you? So those are elements of the defense I think we still don't know a ton about.
100%, yeah. And for those who weren't locked in Saturday, they went what they call FUD for most of the spring game, which is basically like giving a light shove and the whistle blows instead of tackling to the ground. There were some live tackling periods, but clearly it was going to be a very vanilla offensive scheme, and you definitely don't learn what this defensive front really is until it goes against an actual opponent. So many questions will linger, but to hit a few more notes on the defense before we move on, since we're on it now. You mentioned the length of the cornerbacks. I mean, that makes a difference. And we heard them talk about they wanted to prioritize getting that kind of mold of cornerback, longer, more athletic, rangier corners. We didn't see John Humphrey, the UCLA transfer, because he was injured at the end of spring. But assuming he's back for fall camp as he's supposed to be, he and DeCarlos Nicholson just are bodies they didn't have in the secondary before. And you saw it on Nicholson's interception of Maiava, where he tried to lob a ball down the sideline that against a lot of cornerbacks probably would have gotten to its target and gone for a nice gain. But Nicholson is just so tall, so long, and just kind of plucked it out of the air before it could even get to the receiver 10 yards beyond him. He also had a pass breakup on the first series of the game. So the length at cornerback stands out, the depth at cornerback stands out, and we'll get more into that. We'll talk about Marcellus Williams, the impressive true freshman. They then go and add Greedy Vance, the Florida State transfer, on Sunday. He's going to plug into that nickel spot and provide depth there with Jalen Smith, assuming he's back in fall camp after being injured this spring. Prophet Brown, the safeties you mentioned, Kamari Ramsey and Akili Arnold. Well, that's not even counting Bryson Shaw, the veteran, Christian Pierce, who had a nice spring game. Zion Branch is back for fall camp. I mean, they really are just loaded depth-wise. That's what stood out to me about the secondary this spring. The questions on the D-line, 100% valid, especially on the interior. They lose Isaiah Rakes, who I don't think was going to be a big factor anyway after the more we saw this spring. They've got to get another defensive tackle body in there. Even so, depth's going to be very thin and a lot to be proven. And on the edge, I like what they have, but it's a bunch of guys that have to go prove it. I mean, Jameel Muhammad's the one guy who's really done anything tangible in college, and I don't even think he's the highest ceiling guy in that group. It's what can Braylon Shubby do? What can Anthony Lucas do? Does he have that delayed breakout this year? What can freshman Cameron Fountain do? A lot to like there, a lot of questions. And then with the linebackers, like you said, just there's nothing for us to actually evaluate from the spring that we can tell you, okay, yeah, this group's much better for this reason, this reason, this reason. It's just the hope that you bring in Easton Mascarenhas Arnold, who's a proven guy who's played good football at this level. Maybe Mason Cobb clicks better with the staff. Maybe Eric Gentry clicks better with the staff. Maybe Rayshon Davis finally contributes. So it's a lot of hope and optimism everywhere, but a lot of got to prove it still.
Yeah, I will say this. I can't quit Eric Gentry. I am just too in deep on that. So I'm definitely planting my flag in this staff finally figuring out how to use his freakish ability. But I wanted to pose a question to you. I'm curious because this is what I've been feeling coming out of spring. I feel like, you know, I've been on the beat just five seasons now. This next one will be my sixth, I believe. And I feel like this is the least I've ever known definitively about a team heading into the summer. Mm. I don't think that there's much tangible that we actually know. And, you know, I think we can make educated guesses on a lot of things. Sounds like Jonah Monheim is going to be really good at center. you know, sounds like, it seems like the secondary will be better and the wide receivers are going to be talented. But we don't actually know those things. Most of these people are unproven.
Yeah.
Or are in different spots or are being used differently by a different staff. So even at quarterback, I mean, I don't know that Miller Moss is ever going to have a game like he did in the Holiday Bowl. I don't think he has to, like, by any means, to have a good season. But I don't know that we know how good or how middling he is. It's really hard to figure that out at this point. And I think, you know, obviously, like any Lincoln Riley offense, you know, it's going to look a lot different based on who the quarterback is. So we can't really make claims about any other position beyond that. And like you said, at running back, maybe their top contributor is a guy we only saw one time in the spring game and really haven't watched all spring because we don't watch much from running backs when we're able to watch practice. So it just it struck me that I don't know almost anything about this team definitively. I have my thoughts about what I think will happen, but you know, I might be more than 50% wrong by this time in the fall.
And that's why the listeners tune into your expertise here. No,
50% hit rate, baby.
You're absolutely right, and I really hadn't thought about it through that lens yet, but it's totally true. We just went over all the unknowns on the defense, which is most of it, aside from maybe the secondary, which even there is new guys, but still we're talking about a new scheme that is still being installed and implemented, and we don't even know fully the ins and outs and what it's going to look like in the fall. But the offense, you're totally right, and you know, I had hypothesized this coming off of last season that I think we're going to see a true Lincoln Riley offense this year, as opposed to what we had seen, which was a hybrid Lincoln Caleb offense, which involved a lot of Caleb freelancing and input that we're not going to see this year. And he more or less acknowledged that after the game. I don't have the quote in front of me, but it's going to be good for the receivers because they're going to be able to get into a rhythm and know what's supposed to happen when and where, as opposed to Caleb buying 10 seconds and everyone running for open space. But we don't know what that looks like, especially with Miller Moss. Very fair point. The O-line has zero depth, and if anything happens there, you could throw the whole season into flux. But even if they do stay healthy, we don't know what Elijah Page is over the long haul as a redshirt freshman left tackle, or if Mason Murphy can hold up for a full season as a right tackle, or if they're going to bring in a transfer to compete with him or supplant him, or if Alani Noah is ready to be a starting right guard, or if Gino Quinones is ready to be a starting guard for a full healthy season, Jonah Monheim at center, et cetera, et cetera. You are right. We don't know any of this. So, but that to me is intriguing and fascinating and part of what makes this a more interesting year in a lot of ways.
Totally. And you throw on top of that they're playing all new opponents.
Right. Yep.
Who they have never had to match up with for the most part, at least not in an extended period where you're playing against similar styled opponents in different places. So much unknown. And you're right, it does make it exciting, but it also makes me realize that I am not giving anyone a prediction on the record for the season standings next year. No idea at this point.
I thought about asking you for one, and then when it turned back to me, when it turned back to me, I was going to say it's way too early to have a prediction, so I'm not going to go on the record. I wouldn't do that to you.
Glad to hear I preempted the trap you laid for me.
It was going to be great radio, though. Great podcast airspace. Okay, we have jumped around and hit most areas of the field, but I have a few more specific prompts I want to get to, glean as much perspective out of you as I can for our listeners. Which player surprised you the most this spring? And it could be someone we already talked about, it could be someone new. We can overlap here, but who was the biggest surprise?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Let me think about that for a second. You know who I'll keep up with the secondary, and it's someone I haven't really talked that much about, but Jacoby Covington really kind of surprised me.
Okay.
In how quickly and swiftly he seemed to, you know, have a handle on one of the top cornerback spots. you know, last season, for whatever reason, and maybe there is more of an explanation, he had dealt with injuries, hadn't he, at some point last season?
He did. We don't really have a full grasp of what he was going through, but that played a factor, yes.
Yeah, and, you know, it never seemed like until the end of the season that things clicked for him. But he has really sort of gone, like, solidified that spot, I think, in spite of a very deep room, like you said. And now maybe DeCarlos Nicholson and John Humphrey, you know, push him a little bit more in the fall. You know, but I think a lot of those guys are going to play. But Jacoby in particular, I had almost kind of given up on in terms of just how many other, you know, talented guys there were in the room. But it seems like this scheme suits him. So, you know, that's one person that comes to mind. And maybe I'll give another one a bonus. And someone I know you've written about or talked about it a lot is Anthony Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
I was sort of out on his potential in terms of, you know, you see him come in last spring and we all just sort of looked at him like, oh my God, like this is an NFL player who just like wandered onto USC's campus. But he, you know, just totally disappeared down the stretch last season. And I thought it was interesting how he responded to that, which was, you know, very transparently, like, my season was not very good. And I think he was asked what he worked on and needed to work on. He said everything.
Yeah.
So he very clearly grasped, you know, where he needed to make improvements. Now, we haven't really seen him deliver on that. But, you know, just from hearing comments, I was sort of surprised with how much other young talent that could emerge at that spot, that Anthony Lucas, you know, still seemed to reassert himself, at least in the coach's eyes.
Yeah, a story on him last week, and my readers, my audience responded with I believe it when I see it, you know, doubt, understandably, because we built him up last year. The coaching staff built him up last year. His teammates made him sound like he was, you know, the next coming of Lawrence Taylor last year. And then we got to the season and just nothing. 10 tackles, 3.5 tackles for loss, no sacks, and was just an afterthought by the end of the year. And what struck me, as you hit on, is just how blunt he's addressed it, and Sean Nua too. Sean Nua said he knows he didn't have a good year last year, and he's really motivated by that. A couple of his teammates noted that he's just more professional. He's more locked in. He's not joking around at practice all the time. It sounds like there was a little immaturity last year, and that he was a guy that definitely made the flash plays in practice. But when you go back and evaluate every snap, he wasn't as consistent in the coach's eyes as a Solomon Bird. And come game day, they trusted that consistency of the guy who knows his responsibility every play, who's not going to have bust, over maybe the guy with higher upside, but a little more variability. And that's why he found himself down the pecking order. If he's a more consistent guy while bringing those flash plays, I do believe in the renewed hype for Anthony Lucas. I'll call it cautious optimism. I'm not going to go out of my way to plant the flag and pronounce anything about him this year until we see it. But I think there is reason to believe that it could happen. And then with Covington, great point. You know, he was a guy that was brought in a couple of years ago to be a starter then. Like, they brought him in from Washington thinking he was going to be an immediate starter in 2022. Kind of didn't come on till late that season. Then you thought, okay, well, there's some momentum there he can build on. 2023 is going to be his year. And then it just wasn't. And it wasn't a great cornerback group that he was competing with either. He just never really got his footing, whether it was due to health or other factors. So I too, had thought maybe he would have been recruited over this year because they brought in so much depth. But everything we've heard, I agree. I kind of projected him and Humphrey as the starters when Humphrey was healthy. And that's probably what I'll go into fall camp as my best guess. But I do think Nicholson plays, and I do think Marcellus Williams, the freshman, gets some run. So, yes, those are two good options there. I'll give you my answers. I just touched on it. Marcellus Williams, the true freshman.
I'm glad you brought him up. I realized I probably should have mentioned him.
Well, I'm here to clean things up for you. So that's the trade-off we have. Marcellus Williams, the four-star true freshman from St. John Bosco. I've gotten to the point now of just not overhyping incoming freshmen in terms of immediate impact, because it just almost never translates. It just never plays out. Even five-star guys, you know, I just very rarely do I think a true freshman is going to make a major impact. And so I was not thinking that Marcellus Williams was going to be a guy this year because of the depth ahead of him, because of the options they had. But we just consistently heard from everybody about him this spring, from his defensive teammates, from offensive players, from Lincoln Riley. We know he had an interception in like three straight practices. He has one in the spring game Saturday. I mean, at a certain point, you have to take all this and go, maybe this is happening, like right now. So I don't know how he fits in. My guess is he's not the starter, but that he gets ample opportunity, especially early on. And those reps, the first couple games, those snaps, what he does with those will determine maybe where his role is come Michigan and the potents like that. Well, I guess the first game's LSU is not really a throwaway game. But anyways, he'll get some snaps early on, and if he can leverage those, maybe he has a bigger role as the year goes along. But he's definitely a guy that can be a factor this year. And with that, the aforementioned Cameron Fountain, the four-star freshman DN, when they signed him, or when he committed over the summer, and I was watching his tape and getting a look at him, I thought, great potential, definitely needs development, needs to get bigger. And then he comes out this spring and he's like the biggest human being on the entire campus. Like he just looks like he is a second year NFL player physically. I'm sure he's not polished yet, and we'll have some learning to do on the job. But man, like he looks the part. And with him and Braylon Shelby and Anthony Lucas, USC finally has like the kind of defensive ends physically, body wise, that you would expect USC to have, that they just haven't had in recent years.
6'6", 256. Just absurd size.
Yeah.
And it really, you can just see it, like you said, when he's on the practice field. He is kind of this year's Anthony Lucas this point last year.
Exactly. And Braylon Shelby's right there with him. He put on a bunch of weight and looking huge. But when you watch those guys walk out to practice, like, and you're right next to it, that's when you really appreciate, like, damn, this kid's a early enrollee true freshman and already looks like this. I'm buying all the Cam Fountain stock I can. And as you mentioned, he had a great sequence in the spring game. I put together a clip of three plays in one series where he came off the edge and made the tackle on the running back in the backfield, like coming like all the way from the left edge to almost the other side of the line to make the tackle with his speed. And then another play where he had a spin move to get pressure on the quarterback and force him out of the pocket. I think he's going to be an immediate factor this year. I would buy all the Fountain stock.
I think that's a good bet.
Okay. Next question, top transfer addition. Probably a guy we already mentioned, at least it is for me. Who is your pick as the top transfer addition that we saw this spring?
Most impactful transfer. I think, you know, I mentioned this earlier, and like I said then, it's pretty hard to judge just based on the spring game, this position. But Kamari Ramsey and Akili Arnold both seem to have just stepped in at that position, and you know, no one seems to be worried about filling the shoes that Kalen Bullock has left behind now that he's off to the NFL. And I think, you know, when you talk about, you know, how decorated of a safety Bullock was over the course of the time he was at USC, like that says a lot. I think, you know, it seems like their skill sets work well together. And I think just their leadership of that unit, it seems to have shown through. We've heard so much about them and this, you know, the impact they've had on that room. And like you said, there's so much depth behind them that, like, I wouldn't worry about the safety position at all this fall from USC's coaches. So I think considering where it could have been had you not done the work that you do in the portal, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, for me, I'm going to even just single out Kamari Ramsey himself, and that's no slight to Achille Arnold, but Ramsey coming over with Danton Lynn from UCLA, knowing the scheme, the role that he's been able to play as a guy that can help impart things to teammates based on his own experience in this system, and then just the comments that Riley's made consistently about him. It just sounds like he came in and just immediately grabbed that leadership mantle on the defensive side and has been that guy. And the fact that he was one of the three defensive players brought to the post game of the spring game, even though he didn't have a specifically memorable play, like, easily could have brought to Carlos Nicholson for his interception or someone else. But I think Ramsey is kind of like a spokesman, like a face for this defense. And so I would put him as the choice there.
I'll add another one and
bonus content
outside the box. Kind of outside the box, I'm going to say most impactful will be right tackle to be named later.
Yeah.
I think I don't think that they're going to go into the fall with Mason Murphy as the right tackle unless they have to. So, at the very least, I feel like there will be a competition there with whoever they were to bring in. It seems like Elijah Page has locked on that left tackle spot.
He's entrenched.
It has earned rave reviews so far. It seems to have all the potential in the world. But at right tackle, it's as optimistic as it is on the left side. The right side is bleak. I think Mason Murphy has shown, he's inconsistent over the course of the last couple of years. We have never really gotten the full story on him and the beginning of his time at USC. He was sort of in the doghouse for a while, a pretty lengthy stretch, it seemed like, but seemed to regain trust last year. So I'm cautious, I guess, when it comes to him. And I do think that right guard spot too, you might be better off with Murphy as the right guard.
Yeah.
And a right tackle that you add from the portal. Because we don't really know how Gino Quiñones would, work in that spot. And I know you'd mentioned this before, and I think I agree that Alani Noah certainly could win that job in fall camp. So I just think that's a very important hinge point of the offense, so much more so now than it was with Caleb as well. Because with Miller, like you said, it's going to have to operate within a system, and if the system breaks down, we haven't really seen Miller have to do that. I'm not saying he can't, I'm just saying he's not Caleb Williams. I think he would also say that.
I'm gonna play off your point there and lead right into my next topic, which is going to be biggest overall concern, and it's probably going to be stuff that we've already covered to a bit, so that we don't have to go too in depth. But for me, it was the offensive line, for the reasons you mentioned. First of all, they're going to bring in a transfer. They have to. They probably need to bring in two. But they definitely need a right tackle because they have no depth. They have zero depth. If everyone's healthy, they have one reserve that would merit real confidence, and that's whoever doesn't win the right guard job. That's either Noah or Quiñones. Other than that, there is no one behind any of those spots that you can put into a game for 60 snaps and count on. The only tackle that we've even heard mentioned, aside from the starters, is Tobias Raymond, who came in a year ago as the ultimate project, a guy that you thought would take 2 or 3 years to become what he might become. He's the only guy that's even been talked about as making great strides and progressing there. So they have to bring in a tackle, and what you said on Murphy is spot on. He's had a ton of chances the last 2 years, and it's never seemed to consistently take hold. 2 years ago, it was kind of hit and miss. Last year, he got moved inside halfway through the season. Definitely had his struggles at right tackle. Lincoln Riley's really talked him up this spring, and after the spring game, has really espoused his confidence in him. But they are going to bring in someone there to compete, and that will be really that will really shape how I look at the offensive line entering the season. But right now, it's the biggest concern for me, because at any spot someone goes down, I don't know what the answer is. Even center, where, you know, Killian O'Connor's a nice story as a walk-on, who's sent into the backup role, but he's a walk-on, and they haven't even put him on scholarship yet, even though he's been number two guy for a year and a half now, and he's barely played. So take any of those spots, and I just don't know what's behind them unless they really add depth. Is that your biggest concern, or is it still the defensive line?
First, let me just say, God, can we give Killian O'Connor a scholarship? Yeah, I feel like if you get, like, three compliments in a press conference for, like,
yes,
you know, moving up the depth chart, you should get a scholarship. Anyway, offensive line is definitely, you know, probably at the top of my list. And I think I already spent a lot of time talking about defensive line as well, and just more of the depth there. And I will say, I didn't mention Nate Clifton before, and, you know, I can't say that I watched him specifically that closely during the spring game. But, you know, at no point did he, you know, specifically catch my attention while I was watching other things. But that all said, I think my biggest doubt, and I'll go more general instead of a position group, is I worry that while the roster has a lot of talent, they're really counting on young, unproven players to step up in pretty much every position on the field. Fair. And I think, like, ultimately, that is a dangerous proposition. And I think it's going to work out in certain spots. Like I said before, the wide receiver spot, I don't think is a problem. I think, you know, the offensive line, I think some of the young, you know, Elijah Page, I think, has shown that, you know, he's, a lot of people trust him to step up. But, like, an edge rusher, kind of like what you said, after Jameel Muhammad, there's a lot of potential and not a lot of proven people. Barry Alexander, while, you know, very talented, shown in flashes, he could be a great defensive tackle. You know, has still had stretches where he's disappeared from games. There is a lot of projecting being done of anyone who thinks that this team will win 10 plus games in the Big Ten. Now, I'm not saying they can't, but when you're relying on that in so many spots, it becomes very risky. And that's why I just think this season could very easily sway one way or another, depending on how things go and depending on how the season starts. And you start the season with LSU and Michigan in the first month, or first 3 weeks, even. So, you know, it's not easy. Not crazy to think that they could be 1-3 after the first four games, which, who knows how the team responds at that point. That's a long time away from now. But I just think that, you know, as much as you can get excited this time of year about all these young players, they all have to deliver on that potential when it comes to the fall.
That's a great way to sum it up. And I think we've hit on pretty much everything. That's a great way to kind of put a bow on it. I'm going to close with one last fun question. Who was your favorite interview that we had this spring?
No brainer, DeCarlos Nicholson.
Absolutely.
Or actually, I'll say this. I'll add to a coach's category. Really enjoyed Anthony Jones Jr.
Yes. Yes.
I do think he's going to be a character. And after having, like, a lot of running backs coaches in a row that were, like, the same sort of personality, he's, like, a little goofier, which I enjoy. But DeCarlos Nicholson's story is so cool, and kind of related with him on a personal level, and that we both, you know, have young kids at the moment. The fact that he is going to school and playing football while having a young kid is truly stunning to me. But yeah, just a delight to talk to him, and I'm certainly going to be interested to see how things work out for him this year.
I think that was the only right answer. And yeah, for those that didn't listen to the interview, he's a 2-year-old son, and really had never left Mississippi. had gone to junior college there, going to Mississippi State, coming out to USC on his own was a big move, but to do it with a 2-year-old and his girlfriend and really just, you know, shake up his life and take a major chance here. He was just so interesting talking about it, and so kind of very candid and refreshingly just kind of raw about it. It was our first and only time talking to him, and yeah, it was definitely the highlight of the spring interview series. And this has been the highlight of the spring podcast series, Ryan. We appreciate your time. We went way over what I projected, and so you're very generous with your time and your insights, and we'll definitely be doing it again in the fall.
Of course, have to fit this sort of conversation in while the baby's at daycare. So,
all right, that was it. That was the program for today. That was the podcast. That was Ryan Karchi of the Los Angeles Times, friend of the program, friend of mine, and excellent USC beat writer for the Los Angeles Times. Hope you enjoyed hearing his perspective mixed with mine. And I'll reiterate once more, check out the site, Trojansports.com, for the written content, the written follow-up analysis coming. Still have a lot of stories I want to write about individuals, about storylines that we touched on in the spring, but now that it's over and there's a little more time, I want to go a little bit deeper on. So we'll have a lot coming for you on there, and we'll try and get back here on the podcast channel fairly soon with more interesting guests and banter. Thank you, as always.